JF Menard, I am so excited that you're here joining us today on the summit. How's it going?
Things are good, Sindra. Thank you. How are you?
I'm doing really good. Trying to thrive during this time, not just survive. but that's, you know, also very difficult. So I'm looking forward to talking to you today about just uncertainty and change and the role that mindset plays. And I thought we could start just by chatting about and learning more about you. So tell us a fun fact about you.
Oh, I love and I hate that question because there's so many things I would like to share, and we don't have 3 hours. So
yeah,
listen, I'm going to share not so much a fun fact, but maybe just a fact of something I've experienced and has actually defined the way I live my life. So at the age of 18, I almost drowned, which I was actually a few seconds from passing away. And the reason I'm sharing this, wow. I mean, now it's easy to talk about. At the time, it was a very impactful moment, and it was difficult to accept. But the reason I share this is because it really defines the way I go about things. Like the famous saying that there's worse things in life. Like I understand that. And there's a famous quote by Confucius that I really like that says, we have two lives, and the second one begins when we realize we only have one.
Wow.
And that is probably, you know, if I had to choose one quote that really determines who JF Menard is and the way I go about things, I think that's what it would be. So
what I'm hearing is like a lesson that you learned from that is just live your life full out. You only got one.
Well, and I would argue that before the age of 18, I was someone that was very, I would criticize myself a lot, and I would get stressed out for a lot of small things that really didn't deserve my attention. Mm. And since then, I'm able to really see things differently. And I think, and I'll say this in a humble way, I think I'm able to not be fazed by most things that will get to people. I'm able to really to see things differently. And I think it really helps you with my work as well. So, so that would be my fact. I was 18. I was 18. And as you know, at the age of 18, you know, it's a moment of your life where you're starting to be an adult. You're starting to figure out who you are. And in hindsight, I would say it was probably the best timing in my life to live something like that.
Wow. And I'm hearing that it led you to how you're living today. So I'm looking forward to learning more about how you're dealing with the uncertainty and change right now as well. So JF, how would you describe what the high performance mindset means to you? Like what's that idea mean, and how do you make sense of that?
Well, I'm a mental coach, so it means everything. But, you know, if I can give a metaphor, you know, our brains to our bodies is a little bit like the electric panel to a house. Mm-hmm. You know, an electric panel is what powers a house, is what allows us to use our appliances, mm-hmm. what gives us light. Like it gives meaning to the house. Basically, if you have a power outage and it doesn't work properly, or if you have some fuses that explode, like, you know, you're not going to be able to use that properly. And the brain to the body is a little bit the same thing. Like your body is going to follow what your brain gives it, right? So there's this model that I use to explain that. So if you break down a performance, you can basically break it down into three elements. So the psychological part of the performance, the emotional part, and the physical part. Mm-hmm. So the thoughts we have, the emotions we're going to live, and the behaviors that we're going to output. So, and we talk so much, and when I say we, in high performance, not only in sport, but in business and any other high performance realms, we talk so much about the importance of controlling our emotions.
Yeah.
And in reality, the way I teach a mental training is you don't really control emotions. Emotions are basically just results of the thoughts that you have, or the way you decide to see a situation, the way you decide to react to something. So so the importance of mindset is it means everything. It really does. And everything starts there, a little bit like that electrical panel. Everything starts from there and then generates whatever you need in the house. So and to remember how this model works, if you think of psychological, emotional, physical, and you take the first letter of all three words, it gives pep, as in pep talk. And as we know as mental coaches, Sindra, like, mm-hmm. you know, the most important pep talk you can have is your own, because it's fully within your control. And in the end, that's what really has an impact on the way you're going to behave and therefore perform.
Yeah, I was just talking with one of the people that I coach this morning, and she's a news reporter, which is super cool that I love working with her. And she's really learned to talk to herself powerfully. And I think sometimes when we are high performers, we have really big expectations for ourselves that we don't always realize the importance of being kind to ourselves. And what you're really saying is like your thoughts really lead to emotion. So it really does start with what you're putting in here and what you're focusing on.
Well, totally. And if I can just use another quick example, like if I use the electric panel metaphor again, if you have a problem with your plugs, one of your plugs in your house, what's the first thing you're going to do? You're going to go look in the panel to see what's going on. Right. So if you think of an electrical outlet as an emotion, like if you have a problem with an emotion, you got to go back to your panel. You got to go back to your brain and figure out like, how come I feel this way? And it's probably because you spoke to yourself in a certain way that led to that emotion.
Yeah. I think what you said about your experience almost drowning when you're 18 and you learn to like not be so hard on yourself. And what are the other ways that you, you know, you think that you changed from that experience in terms of a mindset perspective?
Well, when we talk about uncertainty, the problem with uncertainty is it's related to the future, and what's related to the future, we don't know because they're not facts yet. Right. So, when you have uncertainty, you need certainty at some point to make sure that you can control something. So I'll give you an example. So as I was working with some of these athletes in Pyeongchang for the 2018 Olympics, at this one moment, just before this athlete's performance, so the night before, we were in the therapy room. There's myself and the coach and the therapist and the athlete. And this is an athlete who was considered medal hopeful and was, there's a lot of pressure on this athlete to perform very well the next day. And we were just chit-chatting about everything and nothing. You know how we do at work centers. Sometimes it's just about keeping busy and keeping the mood light, right? So at some point, the athlete wasn't talking for a few minutes. And so I asked the athlete, I said, what's going on? You're not talking anymore.
Okay.
And the athlete said, oh, I'm just asking myself a lot of questions.
Mm.
And then very naturally, I just answered, and it just kind of came out. I didn't really think about it, but I just said, are you giving yourself answers? And the athlete stood up on the therapy table and looked at me and then said, no, I'm not. Like, that's why I'm so worried. That's why I'm so mixed up.
Oh.
So the reason I'm sharing this story is the next day, as this athlete was warming up for the performance, the athlete walked by me and looked at me and said, Jeff, today I have a lot of answers.
That's awesome.
and the visual that I use for this, Sindra, is when we ask ourselves a question, which for me represents a question mark. When we ask a question, we're searching for an answer.
Mm-hmm.
And if we don't get the answer, not ahead. We're still mixed up. We're still questioning. So whenever you have a question mark in your mind, whenever you have a question, it has to lead to an answer. So it has to lead to an exclamation point. And if you think of the exclamation point, the meaning of it is it's certainty. It's there's enthusiasm. There's conviction that comes with that. So it's finding a way to turn your questions into answers, and because that's what your brain is looking for. Whenever we're worried about something, we're uncertain about something, such as, you know, am I going to be okay in 2 months? Question
right.
mark. Well, the answer is you'll be fine. Like you'll figure out a way. And so it's important to answer those questions so that you put your brain at ease and that you turn question marks into exclamation marks.
I like that point. And I'm thinking about how there is a lot of uncertainty in the world right now. Just like at the Olympics, there's a lot of uncertainty, right? There's a lot of like things that are out of their control. There's so many things out of our control right now, like the regulations in place for us or how other people are responding or reacting. But it's important to not just I think about what you're saying is your brain can just go question, 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 right? It can be like a spinning wheel, like a rat.
Totally.
A spin wheel, right? And what you're suggesting is like, okay, take a deep step back. What are the questions that you're asking yourself, and how can you answer them with an exclamation point?
Totally, exactly.
Awesome. Okay, great suggestion. So why do you think it's important right now that we develop good mindset habits?
Well, I would argue our brain is probably the only thing we control right now, isn't it? I mean, to a certain degree. And, you know, we have to remember that our brain believes what it hears. It's kind of, that's kind of like a GF Menard quote that I say often in my speeches, and I'll say it again, your brain believes what it hears. So not necessarily what's true or not, it's just whatever you feed it, at some point it's going to run with it. So we really have to be careful with the situation that we're living right now and the words we choose to justifies what we're going through. So words like, you know, this is catastrophic, or this is a crisis, or, you know, like it's the end of the world, or listen, what we're living right now is a situation.
Yeah.
And it's not everyone that reacts the same way. There's some people that are actually taking this quite well, and there's some people that are taking this very hard. But we got to be careful in the words that we choose, because does it really represent what's going on? Like, is it really the end of the world right now? No, it isn't. Like, it's challenging, and yes, it changes our routines. But as you know, we have a little part in our brain that's called the limbic system, that when we use words like that, it fires that system, and it becomes, we become very panicky. We become very reactive. Yeah. So again, our brain believes what it hears. So just to use words that are meaningful to what you're going through right now. And I would argue also use words that, no one knows yourself better than yourself, right? So use words that you know you're going to react well to, and that you can actually work with.
Yeah, that's great. Yesterday I did, like every Wednesday I do these like little videos, JF, and I was talking about this idea of the words that we use become how we experience it, right? So I gave an example of, instead of problem, why not say opportunity or puzzle, right? Or I said, instead of lockdown, how about safe at home or comfortable at home? Instead of, like, even I've heard people say stuck at home, and I'm trying to just think of like, okay, how am I safe here? And this is, at any place, this is where I'd want to be.
Totally. And you know what? So something else I'm going to add, just for people that do our type of work, or anyone that's a coach or a leader or a manager that needs to, you know, control their staff, or, you know, make them feel at ease and feel in control. We also need to be careful in how we ask our questions. I was part of a call the other day with all the mental coaches that work with Olympic sports in Canada. And that's one challenge I threw to everyone is, I think we're better off asking questions that are objective rather than subjective. So for instance, like ask our athlete, how are you dealing with the situation? Instead of like, how are you dealing with these hard times, or how are you dealing with, you know, this crisis, or, because I've realized that, you know, some of my clients are extremely resilient and very positive, and many of them are actually doing very well. Like, they're taking advantage of this extra time, and, you know, they're spending time with their family. And so I think, you know, the power of words, like I mentioned, and your brain believes what it hears. We really need to be careful with that right now.
Yeah. Awesome. I really like that point. And I like the idea of not hardship or crisis, or, you know, like not lockdown, quarantine. I don't like any of those words, because they just seem like the negative words just stay longer, and they do create what you're experiencing. So excellent. JF, what do you think gets in the way of people developing this idea of the high performance mindset?
If I could use a general term, Sandra, I would say the concept of fear.
Yeah.
You know, the fear of, you know, fear of failure, fear of looking silly, fear of not being good enough, fear of what others are going to say, or for this particular moment, fear of what's going to happen in the future. Yeah. And you know, we talk about fear with our people every day, and when we listen to our clients' needs, oftentimes it's around fear. It's like, you know, I'm afraid of this, I'm afraid of that, I'm worried about this, I'm worried about that. But fear is just a story we make up in our mind. It's not a thing. It's not a situation. Like, COVID-19 doesn't equal fear. It's a story we make up of something that could possibly happen about the future. That's all fear is.
Right.
So, but the more we repeat it, and the more we give attention to it, the bigger it becomes in our mind, and the more space it takes, and then we can't think of anything else. Right. So, right. I love talking about fear and how to manage it. Like, it's one of my forte, and it's just something I feel very, very comfortable talking about, maybe because of my life experience as well, and how I've dealt with fear. But think about like any little or big fear that we have, regardless if it's in our personal lives, at work, or on the sports field. When we actually live that fear, we go through it, what's our typical reaction right afterwards?
Joy, excitement, you know, because it was amazing. I watched this video yesterday of this little kid on the top of a ski slope, and he was so scared. And then when he went down, he was like, yes.
Well, so you're spot on. And what I'm going to add to that is most oftentimes we realize it wasn't so bad. So what that means is that if we react with it wasn't so bad, that means that whatever we thought about before was dramatized. Mm. It was exaggerated. And if you think of the amount of attention and time and focus we waste from thinking about what could possibly happen, and in the end, I would argue about 90% of our fears don't happen at all, or they don't happen the way we imagined it, right? So based on that, if I can give a little tip to the people who are listening to us right now, is there's a simple question that I've been using a lot in the last few years that has been very powerful and very efficient. And the question is, at any moment that you have a fear about something, just to ask yourself the question, do I need to be so afraid?
Yeah.
And the answer to that question most oftentimes is no.
Right.
So just answering no. Just answering no to your own question about the fear that you created in your mind, it won't necessarily get rid of the fear, but it's going to diminish it, which creates mental space, which allows space to think about other scenarios about the situation. Well, wait a second, I might be scared about that, but I could actually perform well as well. I could actually do a very good job. And if you think of some of the best athletes you worked with, Sindra, and I think about the best that I worked with in my career, They're not fearless. Like, they have fears as well. Like, I would argue some of them have huge fears, and we really need to talk them out, right? But in the end, what they do, and I love this, is if you take the word fearless and you break it in two, what they actually do is they fear less than most. You know, at some point they get into a competition, they're still fearful of stuff, but they just they're not affected as much as their competitors or anyone else that get in their way.
Boom. That was just a value bomb right there, JF.
I told you I could talk about fear for hours.
Well, I think that's so relevant to people right now, because you turn on the news. I mean, for me, like I like to, in my downtime, look at Twitter, or I'm on social media sometimes. I try not to spend too much time there. But it's like every other story is someone dying. And I have to be very careful about that, because then all of a sudden am I going to die? You know,
right.
But don't leave my house because I'm going to die. You know,
right.
What if I die alone? You know, all of a sudden my brain goes to like all these crazy things. And I appreciate what you just said about like just fearing less at this time, and how that really opens up some mental space.
And I mean, if we take that example, do we really need like a notification on our phone telling us that there's an extra case in LA right now for COVID-19? Like, what is that really going to change in your life? And we really need to be careful in how we use our smartphones right now. I think it's a huge problem, because if you look at your smartphone 150 times a day, to be aware of the news, like how many times on 150 times do you really get news? Right. Like, what, maybe 10 times out of 150? But think of all the anxiety that you get. And that's a great example, what you just shared. Like, and again, it comes back to your brain believes what it hears. So you read this stuff, and then your limbic system goes off, and of course you become panicky. Yeah. So.
Yeah, I've had to really be careful about that. And I noticed the days that I don't really am on social media, or I don't turn on the TV. We've just been watching fun like game shows at night. We're not even watching the news at this point. Because you're right, like I think I know the things that are most important for me right now. And so the question that you suggested that we ask, do I need to be so afraid right now?
Yep.
Powerful. All right. How have you developed the high performance mindset during this time, or just like in life?
Yeah, totally. I'm going to answer more towards in life in general. One specific thing that I do is I make sure that I put my focus on what I want to achieve instead of putting my focus on what I want to avoid. It's a very simple thing, but it's very, very valuable. So for example, as a professional speaker, you know, I'm on stage 50, 60, 70 times a year. And you know, I get a little bit nervous or very nervous for some of these speeches. I'm a human being, right? Like, and we have all these techniques that we teach our clients that we use as well to get ready to perform on demand. So, my routine is it starts the day before, and I start thinking about, okay, this is how I want to be walking on stage as I'm telling this story. This is the type of facial gestures that I want to show the audience. This is how I want to be using my voice. Tomorrow I'm going to be on fire. People are going to be looking at me, and it's not arrogance. It's not being pretentious. It's just thinking about what you actually want to do, what you want to behave. And at some point my brain does go towards like, yeah, but Jeff, what if the crowd doesn't laugh to that joke? Or what if, you know, they don't like what you just said, which might be something that I want to avoid, but I always come back to what I want. So again, it kind of ties into what I said a while ago about the question marks and the exclamation marks. So I want to make sure that in my mind, I'm thinking about what I want to achieve instead of what I want to avoid. And in the world of sport, we often talk about, you know, is the athlete performing to win or is the athlete performing to avoid losing, which is completely different. And if we talk in terms of like physiology terms, the difference between performing to win versus performing to avoid losing is like an athlete being on his heels versus being on his toes, like being proactive, aggressive towards the play versus like, no, I'm afraid. And you know, you kind of shying away from what's going on. So a quick example, I've been working with our top judo athlete in Canada for many, many years. Great guy, great athlete. And so when I travel to competitions with him, we have this little routine before he's about to start his fight, before he goes. Somebody's calling in. I know what the problem is, but they're not supposed to be calling in right now. Adapting to change. I'm focused back on our call. So we have this little routine where the athlete, just before they're about to go on the mat to fight, I'll ask him, tell me what you have to do during this fight. And because this athlete sometimes will be scared of what might happen and what he wants to avoid, he'll tell me like, well, I got to be careful not to get too close because he might throw me if I get too close. Then I'll say, okay, well, if ever you get too close, tell me what you're going to do. Don't tell me what you don't want to have. Tell me what you're going to do. And then he says, well, if I get too close, I'm going to extend my arms to create some space between myself and himself. So I'm in a defensive position where he can't throw me. I said, there you go. So we always make sure that his last little thoughts are about what he wants to achieve instead of what he wants to avoid.
I think about how that relates to this word don't, right? Like, I'm sure you've worked with golfers who, if their thought is like, don't hit it in the water, boom,
totally.
It goes in the water. So just kind of shows you the power of thinking about what you want, how you want to show up, what do you want to do instead of what do you want to avoid? Can you give us an example of a person or a team or a business that has worked to master their mindset and saw the impact?
Yeah. So I have several examples, but I'm going to take one that's short enough. And I think I wanted to take some examples that would be relevant to the ones who are listening and they can take something away. So an athlete I've been working with for a long time, his name is Mikhail Kingsbury. So he's a mogul skier. And I'm aware that maybe a lot of your people that are listening don't know what mogul skiing is, but it's basically a skiing course that's about 700 to 800 feet long and with a series of moguls, a series of bumps with two jumps within that course. And they typically take about 22, 23, 24 seconds to go down this hill. So they actually ski four bumps a second, just to give you like, it's super fast. Four bumps a second. It's like, it's unbelievable. So this athlete has been dominating his sport. He's done 109 World Cup starts and he's won 63 of them. And his podium, I think he's up to 91 podiums out of 109 starts. Like the guy's a legend and he's super talented. You know, he's gifted, but he is so tough mentally. And even before we started working together, like sometimes I wonder, did I teach him, or did he teach me? Like, that's how good he is. So the story I want to tell is that as we're getting ready for the PyeongChang Olympics, like he had to win in Pyeongchang. He couldn't finish second. He was dominating his sport so much that he couldn't afford to lose. So there was a tremendous amount of pressure on his shoulders. And talking about performance on demand, like, it's one performance, 24 yeah. seconds, every 4 years. And if yeah. and if you screw up, you have to wait 4 years. You can't try again next week or in a year, right? So right. Right. so we knew that just before his run, he was going to be nervous. Like, it would have been very dangerous on our behalf to think like, no, you'll be fine, Mick. You have a lot of experience. Like, no, the guy is a human being. He's going to have some butterflies just before his run. It's absolutely normal. So to control his mind during that time is crucial. Absolutely. So we worked on this for months and months and months and months. So two things that he did.
Okay.
One, so we're talking about 15, 20 seconds before he's about to go down into the course. He has a routine where he hits his poles, he'll fix his goggles, fix his gloves, and we'll take a few long inhales and exhales. And when you're nervous, typically you rush that. Probably click his poles very fast, fix his goggles very fast. And yeah. that's how human beings typically react when we're nervous, is we speak fast, we behave fast, which creates tension and, you know, we're stiff and we're not comfortable with our bodies. And there's a lot of things going through our mind. So what he did, the first thing was to make sure that he slowed down every step of his routine. So he forced himself to go click, 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 instead of click, 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 click. He went super slow, fixed his goggles nice and slow, fixed his gloves, took a few breaths. And the last thing he said before he took the course was, instead of feeling the butterflies and saying, oh shit, I'm in trouble.
Right.
He said, oh yes, I'm ready.
Nice.
Because as we know, Sindra, the symptom of butterflies is just a physical reaction we have, that our body is getting ready for something important. Like feeling butterflies is not a problem. It's the way we react to butterflies that can become a problem. So the oh shit to the oh yes is a totally different mindset. And in the end, it's about working with the nervousness instead of against the nervousness.
So that relates to the point that you made before about like playing to win versus playing to lose, right? Or
totally.
What you want to achieve versus what you want to avoid. So yeah. Great example there. Super great. And tell us the outcome. What happened?
Well, that's true. I'm used to it, because I tell the story all the time and I'm like, I still get excited. He performed beautifully. He performed beautifully and he ended up winning the gold medal and like hands down, it wasn't even close. His run was almost perfect.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and this, I think, relates to us right now who, you know, as we're going through COVID-19 and this uncertainty and change is, again, what are the words that we're putting in our mind? And you know, just right before he performed, he was saying, oh, yes, instead of, oh, crap, just to kind of show him that he's ready and resilient. And so even just the words you put in your own mind right now, reminding yourself that you got the skills inside you to be able to handle whatever's going to happen and however long this is going to last. So
totally, totally.
Yeah. Wonderful story. So thanks for sharing that. So what's a lesson you're learning during this time period of COVID-19, JF?
It's a very interesting question. And to be honest, I think the biggest lessons we're going to take out of this is once we come back to normal. I think it's very difficult to predict what our big lessons we can come out of it, because it's only been a few weeks. Like, let's be honest here. And, and you know, this is going to last for a while. But one thing that I did realize is it's as if right now life is on pause. Mm-hmm. You know, we were on play for a while, and I would argue some of us were on fast forward because our lives are so busy and, you know, things are happening so fast. And all of a sudden, it's like someone just pressed pause on our cassette. We can say cassette. We're old enough to know what a cassette is.
Yeah. Or CD player, if you're not sure what a cassette is.
Or CD player. But what comes with pause is time to reflect. And I mean, on my end, that's been one of the toughest things. It's like, I'm so busy and things have been, you know, in the last year, there's been so much going on with my book coming out. And like, I'm, you know, I was working with someone, I helped someone win the Super Bowl in February, that which was an amazing moment. And there was just a ton of stuff going on. And all of a sudden this happens. And it's like, pause, lots of time to reflect. And the one thing that I learned is that when I don't have what I love, that's where I realize how much I love my work. And you know, we never know how much we'd love something until we don't have it anymore.
So
I think my, if there's a first lesson that I got from this in the last few weeks is that I'm made to do what I do. Like, I'm so obsessed with it. I love it so much. And that's why it's so hard for me right now to get into a rhythm and, you know, to get going. And what I'm going to challenge the people that are listening to me, and I know it might sound kind of direct as a question or a reflection piece, but I think it's important sometimes to make people think. People right now who are very comfortable with this time off and they don't miss their work, I think it's really a moment where you have to rethink about how you earn a living and what you're doing, because the people who really love their work right now are, they're missing out. Like they can't wait to go back. So again, I'm going to say it for those who are listening that are not missing their work that much and they're actually like, this is an easy time and they feel comfortable being on pause. I challenge you guys to think about the work that you do and maybe you need to do something else.
Something that really is more of your calling or something that you really enjoy that you can get in the flow in, or, you know, that you have this hunger for. I think for me, I've been trying just to keep finding, that's why I'm doing this, right? Is because I had a TED talk that was canceled or postponed, we're not sure, but I'm like, I need to do something creative with this time or I'm going to go crazy. So this is a way that, you know, I feel like I'm still living my purpose just in a whole different way than I intended, but something I always wanted to do as well. So that's a really powerful perspective, JF, is like, if you're not missing what you're doing right now, maybe this is a time to step back and think, okay, what could I be doing differently? Or what's the decision I want to make to make sure that I'm really loving what I do?
Totally.
Awesome. Well, before we wrap up, we got to know when your book comes out and how we can get it.
So tell us about
your book.
Well, so my book originally came out in French because I'm sure some of you have noticed that I have a French name and I might have somewhat of a French accent. So it came out in November of 2019, so just a few months ago. And book sales are going very, very well here in the province of Quebec in Canada, and it's crossed over in France and in Belgium. So we're extremely happy with that. And so we found an English publisher and the book is going to come out. I mean, it's not set in stone yet, but it should come out in January of 2021.
Awesome.
And the title of it is still to be confirmed, but it's going to be something along the lines of Train Your Brain Like an Olympian, Gold Medal Techniques to Unleash Your Full Potential at Work. Awesome. Your full potential at work. Yeah.
Awesome. So people should follow you where so they can get like a announcement of when it comes out.
Yeah, totally. So I'm not really active on social media right now, like for different reasons. I use it for some reasons, but I don't have an Instagram account. I have a Twitter account, but I don't use it that much. But I still use it a little bit so people can stay informed. I do use Facebook and LinkedIn, though, a little bit more. So if you just Google my name, you'll find those links. Or you can go on my company website that is cambioperformance.com. So Cambio is K-A-M-B-I-O. And you'll get some of that. And I also just created a few weeks ago some YouTube videos called Train Your Brain. And awesome. I'm coming out with a video every second week for and there's 50 videos coming out. So it's a 2-year project. So people can go follow my channel on YouTube as well.
Awesome. Wonderful. So many great things that you talked about, JF. I'm going to work to summarize it to the best of my ability. love that you, at the beginning, when you said like your body will follow your brain. So making sure that your thoughts are really on purpose. We talked a little bit about the words you're using and the vocabulary you're using to explain your experience right now. And just the example of the mogul skier who was saying, yes, you know, instead of like, oh crap. When you have a lot of questions, make sure you're answering them with an explanation point. think that's helpful. So we're not just kind of letting our brain go from question to question to question, making us more anxious.
Yeah.
Your brain is the only thing that you can control right now. That is a tweetable comment. And then fear is something you're making up in your mind, and at the best are not fearless, they fear less.
Totally.
So grateful for your time today on the summit, JF. I'm so honored to have you on, and thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate it. And everyone listening, I know appreciates it too.
Ah, cool. Thank you, Sandra. Thank you. I appreciate it.